It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here in studio once again today on this warm but rather beautiful Saturday morning in North Florida. And August is almost in the rearview mirror now. So we can probably start looking forward to a little bit of relief from the heat soon. But as long as the sun keeps shining and the breeze is blowing, not bad.
Yeah, but I look forward to maybe a number in the sixes for the temperature.
Even if it's only early in the morning, I take the dog out. I love those mornings.
I know, the crisp fall morning. That first one of the year is always really fun.
You know, being from where we are, for those of you who don't know, we grew up in Wisconsin. When you get the six number, it's about 2 weeks later you get the three number.
Yeah, it was filled you with a sense of dread up there, and
exactly.
Here it brings relief.
I've long said that my favorite day of the year for the last 31 years is November 1, because that was the day when you turned it over in Wisconsin to the month of November, and you looked at it, your heart just dropped down on the floor because you knew it was going to be 6 or 7 months of never seeing the sun, being either frozen or just starting to thaw, tracking mud everywhere, and having to put kids in snowsuits. And oh, it's so much better here. Just so much better. But I digress. Anyway, for those of you who have been here over the last 8.5 years, thank you. Keep listening. We'll keep showing up. And if you're new to the show, listen for the whole hour if you can, and you might learn something. In fact, we pretty much promise you you'll learn something. And if for any reason you have to miss a show, you can always go to the website, VanWeeFinancial.com. We have a section where all of our shows are podcast. You can also get the Van Wee Financial Hour podcast anywhere podcasts are handled.
We're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Spotify, we're on Amazon Podcasts, we're pretty much everywhere. So if you ever want to find us, and the good news is if you Google Van Wee, don't get a whole lot of other possibilities. We're usually right at the top.
Yeah, look at that, would you? And there's a lot of good stuff on there too that isn't just the podcasts. Our blogs are always interesting, and Adam links up to anything that's cool that's going on business-wise. He gets quoted every now and again with some of the places that you know about. It's CBS.
Yeah, I had a CBS News quote recently and one other one, Investment News, I think.
Mm-hmm. And if you are familiar with the fellow that many of you are, Stan the Annuity Man, Adam's got I don't know if there's a link on
page.
There's a link to that one.
It's a podcast and a YouTube episode, mm-hmm. So check that out. I thought it was a really good talk that we had, and it's worth a listen.
Yeah, and you can also email us through the website at info@VanWeeFinancial. And you can also set up a free introductory meeting where we'll spend an hour and talk about you in our office. So it's a very, not just functional website, it's really a good website. It's very pretty and easy to use, all that stuff. So that's enough for Steve's promotional minute. And now we get to talk about the market, which, for a change, was not down this week.
Nope, just the Dow was down, but other than that, it was a decent week. It really wasn't bad. And the interesting thing about this week is that it was everything that was working in the first half of the year that stopped working in July came back this week. So we saw a big shift in July towards out of technology. Things that just basically everything we saw small caps do okay, but that kind of reversed. And then we saw international doing well in the first half of the year, and then that reversed in July. So a lot of the things that were working prior to this pullback were working again this week. And that was a very welcome trade that I was happy to see. The Dow dropped about 0.7%, but the NASDAQ was up fairly big at 2.3%. The S&P was right in between at a 0.8% gain, and it wasn't just the major indexes that were mixed. It was kind of across the board. The small cap growth index was up 0.3%, while the value index fell 1.06%. So big disparity between growth and value there as well. The technology sector saw an increase of 2.4%, while the energy sector dropped 1.4%. And that is reminiscent of earlier this year as well.
Yep.
China, Hong Kong, Canada, and Germany all saw their indexes drop this week, while Brazil and Mexico both gained over 1.6%. And interestingly enough, even with the weakness in China, emerging markets were able to post a 1.3% gain during the week. So that was surprising. China's been just in a tailspin recently.
They lost about 6%, I believe, right?
Not this week, but in the last month, I believe. The commodities index posted a 1.2% gain, and silver was up 6.4%. So silver, that's another one that had been going up earlier this year and really fell off pretty hard in July. But that was a really notable gain during the week. Bonds increased across the board, except for the very shortest term treasuries, which were down just a hair. But it was nice to see bonds increase in value for the first time in quite a while. In the last month, pretty much every sector of the S&P 500 has gone from overbought to either neutral or oversold. The only sector trading above its 50-day moving average is energy. This is exactly why pullbacks are healthy for the market. They are definitely painful when you go through them, but the market went from basically having zero bargains whatsoever to almost everything looking like a relative bargain. And that is why it has to happen, because if you were to ask me a month ago what looks good, I would have said not much.
Cash.
Yeah, money market fund. Mm-hmm. But now you're starting to see some buying opportunities almost across the board. So I have some trades lined up that I haven't executed just because the market's been so choppy, but I am getting really close to pulling the trigger on those. One interesting note from this week was that Powell spoke at Jackson Hole on Friday, and it didn't tank the market, which was a welcome relief. We did see Thursday go down, especially into the close. But Friday he spoke, and the market was waffling early and then pretty much traded up the rest of the day. So that was really nice to see. Either the market believes that he's not going to hike rates anymore, or they're just – everything's already baked in, I think. So
he came out very aggressively saying that inflation is not where it has to be and we're not afraid to raise rates again. But then he actually sat back and said something that made sense and basically said, but we're not going to do anything in a big hurry, because what we've been saying every Saturday for as long as I can remember, the policies have not had time to work yet.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. It took a year for inflation to peak. Why wouldn't we let the policies that we put in place give them at least a year for them to work?
Yep.
It makes a lot of sense. I think it was a very reasoned and well thought out response, and the market liked it as well. So, but most of all, I was just happy not to see a bunch of volatility on the day that Powell was speaking, because that's been the trend recently.
Yeah.
So one more thing.
It's always scary.
If you're sitting around waiting for house prices to fall, you may have a long time to wait. Despite sales falling, numbers of sales falling, prices are remaining stable or rising in most markets. And you may wonder why that is. And it's very simple. There's a real lack of inventory of existing homes on the market. Nationally, the supply of existing homes for sale is less than 1 million, which is the second lowest total on record. And this number does not include new homes on the market, but the numbers from the July category for sales there are very strong as well. So there just aren't a lot of houses available, and that leads to higher prices no matter what interest rates are. No, I mean, unless demand just absolutely craters, you're not going to see prices come down. So don't hold your breath for that.
Yeah, and the new houses are selling like hotcakes, even at this interest rate. Why? Yeah. Because there's an inventory, not much of one, but there is.
And a lot of lenders or a lot of builders are willing to buy down rates, and there's a number of reasons for that.
So we'll continue this, wrap it up after the break, and we'll have a trivia question. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And lines are open, 904-222-8255 to reach us. And as usual, we have a trivia question, and as usual, it is sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. You have been hearing since, let's say, October 27th of 2022, that the yield curve has been inverted, and that is virtually 100% indicator of an upcoming recession. Well, with have not had one in that
with time. The amount of inversion right with now, the amount of inversion, right. Basically 100%.
Exactly. Now, we still argue that we did have one in the first 6 months of last year, but this inversion did not take place until October, so we haven't had one since then. It's been now 300 days of an inverted yield curve with no recession. What is the average number of days that the yield curve stays inverted before a recession actually happens? So we're at 300. I'm not going to tell you if it's more or less. Just what is the actual average number of days it takes for that inversion of the yield curve to predict correctly a recession? All right, I'm wrapping up the market for the week.
Yeah,
and next week.
Yep. That was basically what I had. There was some decent economic data this week. I feel like we say it every week, but it's just so hard to figure out right now because you're seeing this week we saw two contractionary numbers, one of which was surprising. One was manufacturing, mm-hmm. and the other one was services. And we haven't seen services contract in many, many months.
No, and we have week after week after week of the leading indicators being down.
Yep, and it's, again, this week did not clarify anything.
It did not. And there's a couple of good news items, one in particular that I saw. The bullish portion of investors had been over 50%. That's always a dangerous thing. We don't like that when that happens. And it dropped 19.1% down to 32.3% recently. So when you're under a third of the investors being bullish, that's a very good sign. We want people being scared and not overzealous. When everybody's jumping in and buying their one share of NVIDIA because it's going up so much, no good can come of that. So I wish we had a direction. I hate being this wishy-washy for as long as we've been that way. This is just the strangest market and the strangest time in my 20-odd years of doing this. And when it becomes more clear, we'll let you know.
I don't know. I feel pretty neutral on the very short term, but I feel pretty good about between here and the end of the year.
Yeah, I do too, and for many reasons. The employment's staying really good, and the housing alone, it's a big section of the economy, and it's doing well. And in the absence of further interest rate increases, it should be able to maintain itself anyway. That's a good one. Now, cars, there's a looming thing out there that everybody's got to be aware of. The UAW is threatening strikes on the big three, and they took a union vote to authorize a strike. It won by 97%. Now, what do they want? Oh, not much. Here's what they're bargaining for. A 40% wage increase over the next 4 years of the contract.
Whoa.
A 32-hour work week, getting paid for 40.
Wow.
That's another 20%. The return of benefits, like company-provided pension plans.
Why would you even ask for that? That doesn't make sense. Look at how well that's worked out for Central States pensioners.
Well, they just got a $37 billion bailout. Do you think that might entice some other people into it?
Well, that might might have something to do with
it. Yeah, I know. If you want more of something, throw money at it, right? Cost of living pay increases that they lost right before the government stepped in to bail out the industry during the 2008 financial crisis. It would cost, at all three, if we had a 10-day strike, $5 billion. And here's what would really happen. Now, it's possible they would only strike one, which would be Chrysler, as it's known now, Stellantis. But this strike would cost a lot of money. But what would happen, since inventories of cars are still not caught up to what they generally are, inventories would start to dry up, prices would rise, used cars, which have spent a year now sort of dwindling in price after getting the big run-up, they'd shoot right back up where they were.
They're just now starting to come off those prices, barely.
Yep.
And this would definitely reverse that.
Yep. So what it means for anybody who is in the car market right now, based on the 97% vote and all the things they're asking, I might just hurry on over to your dealership and pick it up now if you can.
This is the problem that happens when you have a overly union-friendly government in place, because they see things like the pension bailout and the government basically negotiating on behalf of unions, and they know they have you.
If this were still the Trump administration, you would not see this hardline stuff going on.
But of course, this is just you always start with your wish list and pare it down. And I don't blame them for trying to get something right now, because know the cost of living is out of control.
About the politics, the economics, everything's ripe for it.
Yeah, it's a good strategy from a strategic perspective. Whether or not you agree with it, it's a good strategy on their part.
Yeah, the president of the UAW, a fellow named Sean Fain, he went on Facebook Live and tossed the contract proposal in the trash. So everybody's
nothing like a little theatrics to get everyone riled up.
Yeah.
But the 10% a year over 4 years is ridiculous. And return of a pension, like no one's going to a pension right now. No. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, tell me how many of you have received a new pension in your job ever.
Yeah, it doesn't happen. Most people have lost pensions in the last 30 years. I just don't see it.
Yeah, it's just truly amazing to me that they're trying to stick to their guns. But the part that bothers me the most, I've negotiated union contracts for 30-odd years now. It's not surprising what they come in asking for. Because as great-grandpa said, you never get anything you don't ask for.
That's right.
So they come in asking for the moon. But 97% strike authorization?
Yeah. I get it.
That's militant.
I mean, they know that they're not dumb. They know that conditions are perfect.
Yeah, that's very unfortunate. It's exactly right. There's anything but dumb. Clever, too clever by half. All right. Enough of that. So that will really harm the rest of the year if it happens.
The other thing is car companies have been in the driver's seat because of COVID, because they haven't been able to sell enough cars. So the ones that they're selling, they're getting full price or more. MSRP used to be a number you laughed at on the way into the dealership and you negotiated down 10-20%. Now it's a starting, if you're lucky, that's where you would just agree to pay whatever they're asking.
You can tell it's reversed when one of the car companies locally advertises, and we never sell for more than MSRP.
Oh, yeah. I've been car shopping, and absolutely, they use that as a bragging point,
Things have changed.
Yeah.
I haven't bought a car for a long time. It's really weird now. Mm-hmm. Well, I forgot one other thing that UAW wants. They want job security for everybody, of course. Because as the companies switch over to electric vehicles, it requires less labor and less skilled labor, so it tends to pay less. They want, of course, equal pay and a guaranteed job for everybody as that shift goes on.
Yeah, I don't know. If this is the one thing where I really, really disagree with unions. I want my work to be rewarded. I want to be able to stand out and get rewarded for that. Exactly. I don't want to be just because I've been here 10 years, even though I'm much better than the next guy, I'm not going to get anything more than the guy who's worth 20 years who doesn't do anything.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. The collective is not the way of life for many of us. Anyway, we're about to take a break, but I wanted to bring up a little bit about our governor. And I'm going to tell you that the things he does that he doesn't take a lot of credit for, some of them are really good for you. And some of those are as simple as tax holidays, sales tax holidays. We have more of them than I'll bet anybody out there ever really thought about. I'm going to get into that right after the break. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And I remind everybody that the lines are open, 904-222-8255. And the trivia question is out there. We have had 300 days of an inverted yield curve. They generally forecast an upcoming recession. What is the average amount of time that an inverted yield curve takes in order to actually trigger, or at least until it gets triggered? I can't necessarily say cause and effect that the inversion does it. It's an indicator. What does it, of course, is economic activity slowing down. But the average number of days, we're at 300. It'll either be higher or lower than that. And we don't know. All right, back to the Gov. And by the way, anybody who watched the debate, wasn't that Wednesday night, I guess it was? Did you watch it all?
Did you watch it at all?
There were moments in there, but those moments were not nearly as important in my mind as it was to see how the media reacted to the people. And it was universal that DeSantis was basically a big old bust, that nobody liked him. He didn't do nearly enough. He's got no personality, on and on. Until, of course, the polls came out.
Yeah. Where he gained.
He won.
And took in $1 million within 24 hours in donations, as did Vivek, which I guess I've been pronouncing his name.
Yeah, it rhymes with cake, Vivek.
Yeah.
That was the way he described it.
Yeah, those two were, if you read the actual people who aren't trying to slant it, those two walked away probably improving their positions.
Right, and those are the two out of the group that are not warmongers, as I call them. Nikki Haley would put us in such a bad position, in my opinion. Feel free to disagree, but there's so many. But there were only two people that I saw that understood that the majority of conservative people in this country have had it with Ukraine. We have had it. $700 to somebody in Lahaina per family. Mm-hmm. $213 billion, which is closer to $10,000 a person, to Ukraine. I'm sorry. It does not add up to me, and now I will get off of politics, except for the good part. DeSantis, we have a sales tax holiday that everybody knows about called Back to School, and that one is over part one. Did you know there's a part two? It comes back January 1 to January 14 for the new semester. That's one of them. We had one called disaster preparedness, which they do in anticipation of the startup again of hurricane season. That ended June 9th. But it's coming back. And guess when it's coming back? That would be today. How about that?
I did not realize that, and I ordered some hurricane stuff last week. Darn it.
Darn. Cancel the order, reorder.
Yeah, right.
August 26th to September 8th is the new... the part two of disaster preparedness. Then there's some interesting ones. The Freedom Summer, which is just all kinds of fun things. Fishing supplies, camping supplies, children's athletic stuff, toys, pool supplies, boating and water activities, general outdoor supplies, etc. That is still on until September 4th. So you still have some time to take advantage of that one. Energy Star appliances. Now, this group is very interesting because these are year-long. The whole Energy Star appliance thing, it lasts for one full year starting July 1. So you've got lots of time there. Gas ranges and cooktops, 1 year starting July 1. And there again, good old Uncle Joe is threatening to take those things away from you. So if you're thinking of going to a gas cooktop, get there fast, and you will not be paying sales tax on this rather expensive piece of home equipment. home hardening, doors, windows, garage doors, hurricane types. That's actually on for 2 years, but it started in 2022. So it's good through next June, June 30th in 2024. Back to school, of course, was over, and I mentioned it starts again January 1. And then there's something that I was totally unaware of. It starts September 2nd. It's called tool time. So maybe Tim Allen could explain it better than I could. But tool time is for just exactly what it sounds like. It's for people who are buying hand tools, power tools, things like that. So it's sort of a get back to work thing, I guess. And all of these things are brought to you by what I think is probably the best run state in the country right now. And DeSantis does not stand up there and take a whole big amount of credit for this stuff. But tool time can be gloves, safety vests, hand tools, safety glasses, toolboxes, tool belts, textbooks even on it, handheld pipe cutters, work boots, ladders. All kinds of stuff starting September 2nd. So if you're going to head off to Home Depot one of these days and stock up, wait till the 2nd.
And you'll no doubt.
Pay you back.
Well, speaking of things DeSantis is doing well, another one has been to relocate assets under management from New York to Florida.
And if Blossom and Chicago, too.
Yes, that was a second to New York, but New York has lost a pretty staggering 158 financial firms in the last couple of years, and it totaled a pretty sizable $993 billion in assets. So just under $1 trillion of assets under management have left New York, and 58 of those companies have decided to set up shop in Florida, including Kathy Wood's ARK funds.
I didn't read that.
Yeah, she relocated her company to St. Petersburg.
Good for her.
Yep. Let's see here. The Paul Singer's Elliott Management, they're $59.2 billion. They moved to West Palm Beach. Kathy Woods, she was $24.7 billion. Pretty incredible. The others have gone to Texas and the Carolinas for the most part. So just pretty incredible. $1 trillion. I can't imagine what the tax ramifications of that are for the state of New York.
I can.
It's large.
And if I ever stop laughing long enough, I'll try to figure it out. Yeah, that old saying, if you want more of something, throw money at it. Okay, well, welcome, Kathy and company, I say, and all the people. Imagine how many support people they bring with them when that happens.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking
Chicago's wealthiest individual moved down here.
I think this mentions him, too. I can't remember the name. Just give me a second.
I should know, but I don't remember it either.
Yeah, I always
forget. But he bought two pieces of real estate, and I believe that was in the billions of dollars of just real estate. And then there's all the people and the assets and the incomes and so on and so forth.
I didn't realize this either, but Charles Schwab moved out of San Francisco to Westlake,
yes.
Texas, too.
Yep. I did know that one.
They're officially moved their headquarters.
Yeah, and Ken Fisher, whose firm isn't Schwab, but it's mighty darn big, he had already moved out of there and had moved to Seattle. He just shut down in Seattle and moved to Texas.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Yeah. I thought he was Seattle-based.
He was. It just makes me feel good when I hear about people making logical reactions to illogical elected officials, I guess.
It's great. What's crazy to me is that you know the inevitable outcome of this is that they will not change their ways. They will double down on bad policy.
And you know what else is really good? We've all been worried about this ever since the migration began, that people are putting up billboards in Texas, come here, but leave your politics behind.
Sure.
In Florida, for the first time in forever, there are more registered Republicans now than registered Democrats. And it's all the people coming down here, and most of them are registering Republican. We now have an excess of about 350,000 registered Republicans in Florida. Now that is something to crow about, I say. So kudos to the gov. And maybe he won't be the gov that much longer. You never know. All right, let's talk about something good that the government did. And so they did it sort of a misinterpretation. But Adam, do you remember when you were selling rocks and such?
Sure.
Getting involved in a project, a couple of projects for nuclear reactor.
Well, it never went anywhere, but we did. There was going to be a nuclear plant put in north of Crystal River, over on the West Coast, and the project fell apart. I never did find out why. Probably funding or
The hardest thing in the world for the last 50 years had been to get a nuke plant going.
Right,
it happened. The Vogtle Unit 3 nuclear reactor, long delayed, it says, started delivering power. So this one is in near Waynesboro, Georgia, and it is now being operated commercially. It produces enough power for $500,000 homes and businesses, making zero greenhouse gases, which they all do, zero. And the last time, and this is all being kept very quiet because they don't want to tell us about these things, but the last nuke plant that opened was actually in 2016 with the TVA, the Tennessee Valley Authority, began operation of its Watts Bar Unit 2. So slowly and under the radar, we are actually building nuke plants.
That's
great. I did not know that until just recently.
If environmentalists were honest, they would want this type
exactly.
of energy.
There are something to the tune of 14 or 17 plants being built right now in, ready for this one, France.
Not in Germany.
Nope. Well, Germany is opening up their coal plants again.
Jeez.
So that they can shut down their nuke plants.
Great.
Yeah, they're not real bright over there. All right, we got to take one more break. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
And we'll go to the phones in just a second. But first, I want to remind everybody that the trivia question is open. How long does it take the yield curve on average, once it's inverted, to accurately forecast a recession? We're at 300 days, and maybe Mike will tell us. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
How goes it out there?
I'm sorry? Oh, how goes it out there? Well, I don't know. Just when I think things are the bleakest, you said something. I tuned in just as you were mentioning that I was always curious about those that have come down to Jacksonville and Florida in general, like myself. Where are they putting their political leanings? And you said
Republicans.
Something about they've been going Republican, and that's good news.
We went from a deficit of Republicans to Democrats as registered voters to a 350,000 surplus, and you could pretty much see it in the last election stats where DeSantis just blew everybody away, including Miami-Dade County.
Yes, that's very good news.
It is indeed.
Just some bad news, though, or at least stunning news that I heard last night on one of the better news channels for real news, Newsmax. I didn't realize that we had an alcohol czar who wants to limit us to two beers a week or whatever.
Yeah.
I generally only have two beers a week because
there you go. So you're,
red wine and everything else.
Yeah, you pass muster. And the second thing is about ceiling fans now. Now they're on to ceiling fans.
Yep.
But this was the one that was quite disturbing to me because we all try to be informative when we pick a stock. We try to do our homework. And if not, there's always professionals like the Van Wees that could give great advice. But this was stunning to me that the Injustice Department is going after Elon Musk. I don't know if you saw this.
I did.
Because SpaceX hasn't hired refugees. And I just found that.
They have a law that says he can't. And they have a demand that says he has to.
Makes sense.
And you know why all this is going on?
No.
I will absolutely guarantee you, although I can't absolutely guarantee it, but you'll know I'm right, because they hate him.
Exactly. Yes, sir.
That's it. They hate him. And that's the way it's going to be.
Unfortunately, when you pick a stock, now you have to put in the mix, in my opinion, is this company or the head of this company liked politically by the powers to be? Unbelievable.
Sad, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. Anyhow, quick shot at the trivia, if I may.
Absolutely.
I'm going to go with, what am I going to go with? It's not how long it gets to a recession. It's just how long they last in general.
Between the day of the first inversion and the day a recession is declared, how long is that? It's been 300 days so far, but there's no recession declared.
Yeah, I'm going to go with 15 months.
15 months times 30, about 450. You're a little bit low.
Okay. All right, gentlemen.
It's quite slow. It's surprisingly slow.
Very good.
We appreciate it.
Thanks
for the
call. Thank you so much.
Yep.
Have a great weekend.
Thanks.
Bye.
Many of you have probably heard Adam and I were just talking about the year end coming, and there will be new limits for things like IRA contributions and 401k contributions and so on. And many of you have probably heard about their proposal to have the catch-up contributions required to be Roth style, so people would lose the deduction. Adam has an update on that.
No. Yeah, so that was supposed to be implemented next year, and the IRS came out last night in kind of a Friday night news dump type of situation and said that, nope, it's 2026, not 2024. So for the next 2 years, you will be able to contribute that that catch-up contribution of $7,500 or more in pre-tax dollars and take the tax benefit now, which is great news. Although, honestly, on this one, I'm kind of indifferent. I would prefer to keep it the option of having pre-tax contributions, but losing it is not the end of the world, because if you do the Roth, you just make that the last money you touch in your plan, because it will be
the application
down the road.
Helps that a little bit too, because you have to have an income of over $145,000.
That's correct.
For that Roth requirement
but
to kick in.
Most people doing catch-up contributions probably have high incomes anyway, because you have to have already put $22,500 into your 401k for this to even be an option for you. So just to do that,
you're
kind
talking
of contributing
about economically well-off people.
Yeah, correct. So it was nice that they pushed it back. Honestly, they were trying to put it in there, and not all 401ks even have a Roth option
yet.
So to try and force it in next year, it just really wasn't very realistic. So I'm glad that they made
that and it bothers me that from what I've heard so far, that number is codified at 145 instead of indexed. If you look at all the things that are not indexed for tax purposes, they should all be indexed. And that index ought to be one number. It's not.
Yep, I totally agree, but we can't change it, so just have to work within the rules that they lay
out
for us.
Absolutely. But that's good news, any delay like that. And also, you know, that date is particularly important. It should be important to everybody. That's the day that the Trump tax cuts expire.
That they chose that for a reason.
I am sure they did. Now, we need the Senate and the House and the White House to extend those tax cuts.
I don't know if that's going to happen.
Neither.
I have a lot of doubt about that, but we'll see. You never know.
Well, the problem is a lot of the people who are going to prevent us from getting all those, if it works for them, they're the people that would be affected greatly by this, because everybody saved about $2,400 in taxes.
Yeah, even from the most modest working class family up until the high earners, everyone had benefited from that. And they won't tell you that. They won't admit it.
Nope.
The news doesn't like to talk about it. Right. But the only good news I can see is if Biden keeps attacking alcohol, ceiling fans, and gas stoves, that's going to make him wildly even more unpopular. And maybe there is a chance of getting all three.
Yep. He was basically
alcohol. Why would you go for alcohol when we're about a year out from an election? That's the worst thing you could do.
Well, I've been sponsoring the prohibition movement for 100 years. Prohibition of Democrats in the White House. Like I said, I'll get less political soon. Speaking of politics, Massachusetts has struck again. Hear about this one?
I don't know.
Welcome to the millionaire tax.
I did hear about it.
4% more on incomes above $1 million.
Well, I'll tell you, if I'm making $1 million in Massachusetts, I know what I'm doing, looking at real estate in Florida.
Yeah, and they're going to come looking for you if you're trying to evade it too. But Massachusetts cannot get enough stupidity, I guess.
Nope.
These people are beyond my comprehension. But they're not alone. How about we add to that the, let's see, I got to find the official name for it. It's the, I'm not sure I even have it here. I got it. Sorry about that. Wrong page. The oligarch bill that's been presented by the squad people in Congress. And that includes such notables as Rashida Tlaib of Michigan. The oligarch tax says they're going to tax the people who have a net worth above a certain amount more, like 1,000 times what the median net worth is in the country. So they're going to tax those people between 2% and 8%, depending on how much more they are than the median, of their wealth every year.
I'll take things that'll never happen for $200, Alex.
And that would be the oligarch.
Yeah. Act. No way. This is virtue signaling. They know that none of this will ever happen.
It absolutely is. And one thing everyone should be aware of, and they don't seem to be up there. You know what your net worth is? Anybody out there listening?
Most people don't. And honestly, it's a really difficult thing to put an exact dollar figure on.
And it changes every single day if you've got any investments.
Real estate values rise and fall. Investment portfolios rise and fall. There's just no way.
It takes a lot of work to calculate your net worth.
And even then, it's just a snapshot.
Yep. One of the first things we do with new clients is we actually go through the process of determining the net worth, because that's how you find all your assets. And you don't know where you're going until you know where you are, obviously. But it is not a simplistic thing to calculate your net worth.
And what if everybody
had to do it?
If you own a business, forget about it.
Absolutely.
There's no way to. How do you put a value on our business? I mean,
happens next to impossible. In the year when the stock market goes down and the real estate goes down? Do they refund you some of that? No, probably not.
Of course not.
Yeah, this is just, as you say, it's a virtue signaling stupidity at the absolute highest levels of government.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's enough to make a normal person.
The only thing it's not is surprising.
That is true. I've got a bunch more stuff, too. Just quickly, Wells Fargo had another $35 million fine overcharging excessive fees. There were a couple more advisors that have been thrown in jail. Remember the first rule, everybody. And with this next weekend is the transition from TDA to Schwab. Both of those are third-party, independent, huge places where you can see everything you've got 24/7, 365, starting on the 5th of September. Always know that you have to do that. The average number of days between the inversion and the recognition of a recession is a staggering 589 days.
That would put us out till about June of next year before we would get to that average number of days.
And when you're trying to say cause and effect and all that, that makes it real darn hard, doesn't it?
It does.
Thanks for listening. We'll be here next week. Hope you are too. This is the Banwe Financial Hour.
AM 600 WBOP Jacksonville 101.1 FM.